Welcome, everyone, to episode 328 of the NBA podcast. I am Brian Toporek, and as we eagerly await news about whether the 2019-2020 season will resume, we are going to continue with our series on ranking the best free agents at each position going into this offseason. So we've done point guards and shooting guards. Both of them were somewhat underwhelming. Today, we are doing small forwards, and there are actually good players to discuss. So get excited for that. Before we get into it, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today is my Danish radio celebrity superstar of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
Hey, Brian. It's going well. So I just wrapped up the whole radio podcast series that we did on The Last Dance, which was a lot of fun to do. I was on live radio as well to just basically promote it. The station did just a tremendous job at promoting this entire event, and we rose every single week, significantly so. Over the past week, we saw a 34% increase in listeners.
Wow.
So that was pretty good. And like we were rated top 10 over all the station's programming and wow, top 100 in Denmark. Was pretty good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So celebrity is actually, we're going to stick with that. It's much better than Stable Genius.
Yeah. I loathe both terms, but if I had to choose, the non-Trump version is probably the one I would prefer, yeah.
Good. All right, we're sticking with it. So more point guards and shooting guards, we had like one or two good players in each position to discuss, and then it was just kind of flotsam. Today, we have at least four good players. I don't want to go much
further.
Oh, three?
Yeah, so remember in the earlier episodes that we had this rule set up in place that a guy, if he played more than 50% of his minutes at a certain position, that's what we deemed this as?
Yeah.
Ingram is a four.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. He played 62% of his minutes at the four this year.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't even check him because I just assumed.
I know. I had a feeling that you didn't. So as soon as I saw his name, I immediately went to Basketball Reference.
Oh, that's terrible. All right. Well, then we're down to... Well, the power forwards is ridiculous.
Yes. That one is loaded.
Yeah. If you need a power forward this summer, you're going to get... I mean, you could get some high-end ones, but you could also, like... Man, you could steal a lot of good players at power forward. Damn, you're right. Yeah, even Cleaning the Glass has a 62%. Son of a...
And here's the thing. We've been saying this since the point guard. So, well, next time for the shooting guard, it's going to get a lot better than we did the shooting guard. So we're like, we had to move a bunch of them for small forward. And now, at the small forward episode, we're like, oh, no, Brandon Ingram is a four. That's... We keep moving on up. Eventually, it's only going to be like a setters podcast.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, all right. There's still three good players then. And then now I have to decide between the bottom. We'll figure that out later. Let's start with DeMar DeRozan then. If Ingram is out, DeMar DeRozan could be a free agent. We don't know that he definitely will be.
Right. But why are we starting? I thought we were starting with the best small forward on the market.
You think? Oh, boy. All right. Yeah. Hit me with your hot take right away.
Yeah. I think Bogdan Bogdanovic is the better free agent prospect that compared to DeMar DeRozan.
Okay, so I had a feeling you would take an issue with where I put DeRozan, and I want to ask you this.
All right.
Remove contract from the equation.
Right.
And who is the better player?
So in terms of that's a good question, but it has a layered answer. I think in terms of like the overall skill set, it's clearly DeMar DeRozan, yes. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the NBA fit in the year of our Lord 2020, I just have to go Serbian here.
Mm.
So yes, DeMar better skill set, absolutely, like more versatile player. But Bogdan is good, man, and he understands what good shots are. He can dribble his way into shots, both mid-range, long-range. Like, he is a legitimately good player, and I think just the way that the teams are playing offensively right now, he's right up there. And I think I would exceed him in terms of DeMar DeRozan for sure.
All you had to say is Bogdan shoots threes. That's
because that is true. That is true.
Yeah. And I'll accept that. I think not only is it skill set versus like talent, I think it's team dependent, right? Like if you have a team that needs more of a role player, you're going to take Bogdan. If you have a team that needs more of a number one scorer, you would take DeRozan, although I don't know that you want him in that role for your team if you have championship aspirations.
Right. Look, so here's the thing, right? And this isn't a hot take per se, I think, but DeMar DeRozan, and look, obviously he's got some worth. Like he's mm-hmm. a fabulous playmaker. He's an above average rebounder. You know that he can get to the line. You know that he can score near the rim. He, regardless of whether he shoots or not, he can get you 20 points. So there is absolutely value to be had in DeMar. But looking at who what the league is at this point, I should say. Like, would anyone be willing to shell out like even $20 million a year for DeMar? And let's just for once ignore the Knicks jokes.
But it's not even a joke. That one's legitimate. Like it's not. It's bad. I mean, we don't know because Leon Rose is now in charge. So maybe that changes. But I mean, it was the day before the season shut down. Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports reports DeRozan, and the reason that we're even considering DeRozan in this, you know, normally I would say he's just going to pick up the 27.7. He'll just pick that up and become a free agent in 2021.
Right.
Chris Haynes, the day before the season shut down, says if he can't agree to an extension by the late June deadline, he intends to decline the option to become an unrestricted free agent. He also said declining the option wouldn't close the door on him re-signing with the Spurs, but it would definitely open an avenue for a team like the New York Knicks who are expected to be interested. So it's not even like we're making Knicks jokes. It's Chris Haynes is reporting the Knicks are expected to be interested.
No, but it's still a joke.
Yeah, well, it should be.
Yeah, yeah. Right. The thing is, like, even if we ignore that, which apparently is very, very real, like, how much do you go for DeRozan financially? If I'm a team and I'm sitting there going, well, I need someone who can come in and produce on multiple levels. Sure. Mm-hmm. I identify DeRozan as such, but I also know that him not shooting a three puts a severe cap on what my offensive potential collectively as a team will be.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the offer? It's certainly not $20 million, at least not from where I'm sitting. I might be wrong. I might just be a DeRozan hater. I don't know. But I'm sitting there looking at him, and I'm going $15 million max. Despite everything that he offers, I'm just not willing to put him into that position because he takes up a lot of possessions. He really does. And again, that's not necessarily a fault. I think he would have been an MVP candidate had he played in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But his style of play, the way he gobbles up possessions and just doesn't really affect the spacing of the floor, that's a significant problem.
Yeah, I think what I would feel comfortable paying DeRozan and what DeRozan is actually going to get, regardless of whether he's a free agent this summer or next summer, or this offseason, I should say. We got to just not say summer anymore.
Right.
It's becoming increasingly clear that free agency is going to be in the fall. The gap between what I would pay him and what he's going to get is enormous.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, for all of the reasons you listed, if you were paying him, you know, 4 years, $60 million, I'd feel great about it. But if I'm paying him $25 million a year...
Oh, no, that would be... I mean, $25 million, you already lost me there. That is like Twilight Zone kind of lack of realism. If I was leading a team and that paid $25 million a year for current-day DeMar DeRozan in this NBA climate, mm-hmm. I would be a dinosaur.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's the things that we have mentioned in past episodes apply here as well. The market is going to be limited. There just aren't that many teams with cap space. It might be even less, depending on what happens with coronavirus and how they figure out how to, you know, the revenues are probably going to drop substantially next year. So we can only assume the cap is not going to be $115 million as projected. Even with the $115 million, there were six teams. And, you know, I don't think the Hawks will be in on him. I just don't see why they would be unless it was a reasonable price.
Can we talk about, like, the elephant in the room as well with DeRozan, which isn't his shooting?
Yeah.
If he was a good defender, that would change everything. Like, you could actually make the argument that if he was kind of like an Andre Iguodala type, you know, not necessarily a great shooter, but someone who could be a game changer defensively. And then if you add that to his current package of being a playmaker, a rebounder, and one who can get to the free throw line and convert a lot of points on the interior, like, you would be able to actually have a significant piece at your disposal. Yes, your offense might have a cap, as I alluded to previously, but your defense would go through the roof as well. Because if you had a defensively inclined swingman like he is at the 2-3 position, who's as athletic as he is, that's a devastating weapon. Yeah. For him to not be that, that is what bothers me the most. This is where I think this hurts him, that he's not that multi-layered. Like, he's layered offensively, and that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess the question with DeRozan is, what do you think his best role is moving forward? If we're assuming he's not going to substantially improve as a shooter or a defender at this point, he's already 30, that ship has probably sailed.
Oh, man. I mean, you would have to put him on a team that has a lot of shooting, but now becomes the problem, because if you have to think about, oh, what do I need to put around DeRozan, then you are effectively building around DeRozan, and you shouldn't. Not at this stage of his career with his current skill set. That's just a non-starter. So you have to look at it from the perspective of, who is my star player? Mm-hmm. What can my star player do? And does DeMar DeRozan fit into the fabric of what my star player or star players do on the basketball court? So that's how I would start that line of thinking. In terms of what his best role is, I don't have like a catch-all answer for that whatsoever. It depends entirely on the team makeup.
So I was thinking about potential landing spots for him earlier.
Right.
And I don't know if this is necessarily a hot take, but let's say the Golden State Warriors are not able to flip Andrew Wiggins for Giannis, as they so hope to do.
Uh-oh.
Who would the Warriors rather have in that number three role? Wiggins or DeRozan?
Wiggins. I gotta say Wiggins here, because I'm not a Wiggins fan, but his age is an asset still. And he's also athletic, and I will give Andrew Wiggins this. When he is locked in, defensively, he can be good, if not great. Mm-hmm. Like, I would argue that a locked-in DeRozan compared to a locked-in Wiggins, like, defensively, then Wiggins is, like, clearly two or three levels above. That changes everything for me. I know he's never going to be a strong shooter. I know that he offensively is going to have a similar impact as DeRozan, even though he does shoot the three, which does matter, but he's never going to be, like, an uber-efficient player offensively. So if he can somewhat balance that out by giving me, you know, good defense on the regular, on the other end, I'm gonna take that, and then I'm gonna live with the quote unquote upside.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks that the Warriors didn't get a chance to really see Wiggins with any of their stars, because and maybe they will if the season resumes and Steph Curry actually plays, but that sounds doubtful at the moment. So they might not be in a tremendous rush to move him this summer or this off season either way. Cause you know, if the Giannis dream doesn't go through as intended, you know, Wiggins is under contract for a couple more years. They could still flip him later if he doesn't prove his value. But I was thinking, like, offensively for DeRozan, a team like the Warriors might be his best fit moving forward, where he doesn't need to be that number one option, and he's got the shooting of Steph and Clay around him, so he could really feast as secondary playmaker, off-ball cutter. He could bring that mid-range element to them. He could be like what Chris Paul was for the Houston Rockets a couple of years ago as well. So, but it's hard to find teams like that for him. Like, if he doesn't land on the Warriors, I don't know where he fits well.
I mean, the Warriors is a very good point as well, or a very good destination, rather, because here's the thing. Unlike Houston, that just kind of, you know, they're who are allergic to taking an open mid-range jump shot.
Mm-hmm.
The Warriors have this philosophy of basically saying any open shot is a good one. Like, obviously, they're not going to be chasing like the 23-footer or 22-footer. But if they have an open mid-range shot, like, they're going to take it. They're not going to look a gift horse in his mouth. If they have an open shot, they take it. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, I agree with you. I just wonder if... You know, for me, the question is Draymond, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if Draymond is ever going to be a respectable shooter. I mean, right. It just doesn't seem that way.
No.
Klay is coming off the ACL tear. You know, Steph just had an injury, like, the roughest of his career so far, at least in terms of how much time he missed. There are a lot of questions like hovering around above that team. Adding DeRozan to the mixture, oh boy. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I really don't know. I had a thought about DeRozan the other day, and I want to kind of, you know, just throw this one at you, and then you can call me an idiot, because I'm pretty sure this is where it's headed, but it's an idea nonetheless. DeMar DeRozan as a small ball four.
Mm.
Sort of like the same transition that Rudy Gay made.
Yeah.
But the thing is, without Rudy's three-point ability, where he just kind of matches up against players who are bigger, but also slower, and you kind of lean into the DeMar's skill set of being this guy who attacks from 15 feet and in. Basically, you tell him, okay, you're four now. Your job is to relentlessly attack bigger players. So here's the benefit of this is... You get big men in foul trouble. That's the goal, at least. And preferably shot blockers, so you can open up the paint moving forward. So if you get a good shot blocker in foul trouble, like, very early in a game, that could change the flow of your success for that game. And also, just him getting to the free-throw line and generating points, because he can do that. And because he is so good at converting, you know, from that area, just leaning into that skill set of his.
Sure, yeah.
At the four. Is that dumb, or is that something that could be so dumb that it might work?
I mean, he doesn't have Gay's size is the one issue. So Rudy is listed as 6'8", 230. DeMar is 6'6", 220. So
that is correct. He is a couple inches short, yes.
Yeah, so that might complicate it, but offensively, I don't think it's crazy. I think defensively is where you might run into some issues, but yeah, I mean, I think... You said it well earlier. You almost have to build around DeMar because his limitations are so pronounced.
Right.
But he's not a good enough player for you to build around him. So you have to find a team that fits him. And again, it's just increasingly difficult given his age and the contract that he's probably going to want. It's hard to find a good fit unless the Warriors are just out on Wiggins and want to do a swap.
Right. It annoys me to great lengths because I think he could be so much more than what he is.
Yeah. So if you were his agent, would you advise him to pick up the player option no matter how miserable he might be in San Antonio?
Oh, hell yes.
Yeah.
Hell yes.
Yeah. Because, I mean, I think it was Jabari Young of CNBC who also, after Chris Haynes had this report, you know, he went, I think it was on a radio show or something, but he came out and was like, yeah, DeMar is miserable there. It's like not a secret. It's an open secret. So he's still considering, despite the potential for the cap to fall, whatever, he's still considering opting out. But given everything that's going on right now, I mean, there are very, very few players this summer who, if I was their agent, I would advise them to opt out. It's basically Anthony Davis. And then, as we discussed last episode, maybe Evan Fournier. But other than that, every single player. Like, we are not discussing Gordon Hayward today. We are not discussing Otto Porter Jr. because they are not opting out. It's just that easy.
I will say this, though. Like, yes, if I'm his agent, I advise him to take the $27.7 million player option.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know that's not how the league functions.
Yeah.
Like, back channeling is a thing.
Yep.
So if the Knicks are basically promising him some sort of 4-year contract worth approximately $100 million.
Oh, yeah.
Then I pivot the F off the player option, and I go, DeMar, this is the last contract you're ever going to earn because your career is going to die with the New York Knicks.
Correct.
So might as well cash in. You know, you pull a Joakim Noah.
Yeah, yeah. Run, do not walk, and accept that contract 100%.
Correct. Yeah.
All right, let's go into Bogdan Bogdanovic, Mort, since you brought him up, and he was next on my list as well. And I had a feeling that you might push back on DeRozan being above, but
yes,
in terms of the contract that they are probably going to command if they do both become free agents, I think DeRozan at least will probably earn more money than Bogdan. But Bogdan's an interesting case because I do think, you know, we mentioned how few teams have cap space this summer and how difficult it might be for some of these guys to get big offers. Bogdan's one of the guys I think a team like the Hawks in particular might be interested in or should be interested in.
Yes. I mean, look, he leaned into his three-point shooting this year. He bumped it up to 7 attempts per game, and that's despite playing just 28 minutes a night. Mm-hmm. Like, he's launching those bad boys. And for him, this was a sign of real growth, because when he came into the league, like he shot a lot of mid-range jumpers. Like, he would dribble his way into, like, 17-footers. And he was decent enough at them. That wasn't really the issue. It was more so when you saw him shoot, everyone was kind of like, that shot translates to the three-point line a lot. Like, don't settle for the mid-range. You can go out and you can extend that range significantly because that shot is the same all the time. And for him to do that this year, I think just opened up his game. I understand that statistically he produced almost exactly at the same rate as last year, but that sort of defeats the purpose because he dropped 10 percentage point from the free throw line. Like, he was really struggling in that area for some reason. So for him to actually be able to balance that out of shooting the three ball and for him to actually give Sacramento that additional spacing was huge. The fact that Luke Walton couldn't understand how to utilize him, hashtag Luke Walton, I guess.
Right. Yeah, that seems like more of a Luke Walton issue than a Bogdan issue.
Correct. So for me, I'm sitting here and I'm looking at Bogdanovich's number and I'm looking at his impact, and those two don't really correlate. Like, his numbers are okay. You know, you're looking at 14 points a game, just a little bit over 3 rebounds, 3 assists. It's nothing that stands out. For the untrained eye, they would look at it and go, oh, that's not anything significantly. His value and his impact in the games far outweigh those stats. Like, he is a significantly better player than what those numbers indicate. And I think smart teams, will recognize that immediately.
So what would you feel comfortable offering him this summer if you're, let's remove the Kings from the equation because we'll get back to them in a second. But if you're an outside team, if you're Atlanta, what would you be willing to offer Bogdan?
So because Bogdan is 27, I would be locking up him up through, you know, his prime years, 27, 28, 29, so I'd be willing to go pretty high, above 20, probably.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
Well, I think I understand that people kind of balk at that a little bit, and it's not just the three-point shooting. I just think he's extremely smart. Like, when you watch him play, he just makes smart reads. He makes smart calls. Like, his passing is, again, smart. It's the same damn word, but like, he's clever. He's intelligent. He can read the floor. When he gets into the lane, he usually makes the right call. He doesn't really rush anything. You can sense that he comes from he has a background that's very disciplined in terms of like how he developed as a basketball player. That carries so much weight, especially in a playoff setting. And we haven't really seen him in that. Yeah. So for him to go into a team that may be making the playoffs, I think that is where you sign him for. That's where those extra million go. That is, you're going to get a reliable presence in the postseason. Someone who doesn't turn the ball over, doesn't foul a whole lot, who just reads the floor and acts accordingly. That is worth a ton under the right setting.
Yeah. And I mean, the Hawks are in the position. You know, Trae Young's just coming off of his second season. John Collins is up for an extension this year, but they still have a couple of years before all of the big money starts coming on their books. We don't even know if Collins is going to stay in Atlanta. But Clint Capela is on a pretty reasonable contract. Like, Kevin Herter is also on a rookie deal. So this is the time they can afford to even overpay a little bit, depending on, you know, I don't want to say necessarily that 20 plus million for Bogdan is an overpay, but even if it is, this is when they have that window to do so.
Right. And I should clarify, I'm not saying you start out saying, hey, over 20.
Right.
Obviously, you start out by maybe, you know, 16, 17 million a year, but you have this idea that, okay, if it breaks 20, we're okay with that.
Yeah. So the other complication is that he's not an unrestricted free agent, he's restricted. Right. So you also have to go back and say, all right, cool. Well, what will the Kings not be willing to match?
Probably 20.
Yeah, I'm wondering, like, where is their walkaway point? And is it 20? Is it higher?
I don't think it's higher. You know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it feels to me that when you look at how the Kings have spent money in the past, that they have spent like a small market primarily. They haven't really splashed a whole lot on guys. Like they give out these really dumb, like, mid-range contract, and also that contract to Barnes, which I just think was unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
But like 13, was it 13 million a year? No, 3 year, 37, right, for Corey Joseph?
Yeah, I think 36, 37, somewhere.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's still ghastly. Yeah.
Right. It was a mistake.
Correct. So I think when they do splurge and go big, it hasn't really worked out. So it would be nice to see them actually just say, well, we're willing to retain good players at fair market value. Yeah. That would be nice. That would be positive. That's the way smart teams operate.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it feels like they have to make a choice this summer between Buddy Hield and Bogdan, right? Like,
no, not right. Like, you don't think so? Why? No, why?
Because Buddy was pissed. Buddy got benched. He was pissed that he was starting to leak stuff about maybe having a trade request.
Yeah, but that's because they started, like, playing him over. Like, that's because they started playing Bogdan at the two, or actually just kept him at the two after they benched Hield. Like, mm-hmm. why not move Bogdan to the three? And then run Fox and Hield in the backcourt. Mm-hmm. Bogdan full-time at the three. Then when Bagley returns, honestly, I don't understand all the center hype for Bagley. To me, he's clearly a four. Like, he doesn't have the wingspan or the defensive acumen to be a five full-time. So run those four. You got to figure out something else with some of the guys for sure. And then maybe, what, Rashawn Holmes at the five?
What do you do with Harrison Barnes?
That's the thing. That's what I'm saying. You need to figure something out.
Yeah. But that's what I mean, you're paying 20 plus million dollars to Harrison Barnes every year, and you're paying 20 plus million dollars to Buddy Hield every year.
Yeah, but then the decision comes down to Barnes, not Hield.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to be harder to offload Barnes than Hield.
For sure. That's because Barnes is a significantly worse basketball player.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying, if they're not... I don't think they're going to want to pay $20 million per year to a guy coming off the bench.
Agreed.
So, if they re-sign Bogdan for, let's say, somewhere between 15 and 20 a year, they're going to have Hield for 20+. They're going to have Barnes for 20+. They're not going to want to bury Bagley, but do you move him to the five and then have Rashawn Holmes come off the bench? That would be dumb, because Rashawn Holmes, like, transformed that team. Yeah. Fox isn't getting benched, There are basically six players vying for five spots, and three of them are making enough money that you're going to be reluctant to bench any one of them.
Right, and this is what I'm saying, basically, is I don't think the discussion should be Bogdan versus Buddy. I think that's the dumb play. I mean, this is all about Harrison Barnes, let's be honest. This is all about how to move on from Harrison Barnes. And thankfully for them, the Kings did one thing that's clever. You know, they front-loaded that deal.
Mm-hmm. The descending contract.
Correct. So that is at least an asset for them. The problem is, it might not be as big of an asset as they thought it'd be.
Right.
Because it's still Harrison Barnes.
Right. Right. Yeah. I feel like the Kings are going to retain Bogdan if the price is somewhat reasonable. Like, if it's not $25 million a year, right. I think he stays put. But it does feel like they're going to have a hard decision to make whether to just keep everyone in the fold. But then you also have De'Aaron Fox, who's eligible for an extension this year. So then next year, like, this team could get very expensive very quickly. And for what? They were the 11 seed in the West when the season shut down? I know Fox missed time, Bagley missed time, so this isn't necessarily reflective, but, like, do you think this team is currently constructed can develop into a championship contender?
Oh, I no. Don't. No.
So are you paying that much money to these guys to, like, maybe make the 7 or 8 seed? Possibly.
I don't know. It's the Kings, right?
Yeah, they might be so desperate to make the playoffs that, like, that's okay. They'll overpay all these guys, get one playoff berth, and then figure it out later. But I don't know. It feels like they have to make a decision about if they're going to re-sign Bogdan. I do feel like they have to move on from one of Hield or Barnes, and I think it's easier to move on from Hield. But if they can find a taker for Barnes, more power to them.
I have this sneaky suspicion that Fox might not be a King for long.
That's because interesting.
I think ultimately, right, they're not being managed properly. They just aren't. This is a poorly managed team.
Yeah.
And they are desperate, as you just said, to make the playoffs. I think some team out there is just biding their time, and then they offer, you know, a package of veterans, like, you know, a playoff type of package.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the individual parts may not be fantastic, but you just kind of know, oh, okay, if we get this package, we're a playoff team.
Yeah.
And then they just wrestle Fox away from that team because, hey, instant gratification time.
That would, whichever team does it would be very smart.
I kind of think, and this is just me, and I may be just be excited about it, but I wouldn't be shocked if Arturas Karnišovas was that guy to do it.
Oh.
Because the Bulls have a lot of those pieces where you can say, oh, okay, if you move those guys over there, like, you can maybe get to the playoffs if you combine it, you know, with Hield, Barnes, yada, 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 and so on. Like, that wouldn't shock me.
Zach LaVine?
Yeah, for example, like, yeah. And also because of his, you know, he's on a low salary, like $19.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
That could be something to look out for. It might not be the Bulls, might be someone else. Yeah. I'm just saying, I think ultimately, you know, the Kings are one of those teams, in my opinion, that other teams call to just throw a lot of doo-doo on the wall.
Right.
To see if it works, because they are...
Just checking right. If you're willing to sell your best player for 60 cents on the dollar.
But let me ask you this. Like, as you said, they're so desperate. Mm-hmm. If you're Vlade Divac, and you get that call,
yeah,
and you get offered a trade package, you know that you're losing out ultimately on talent down the line.
Mm-hmm.
But you know for a fact if you take it, you're going to make the playoffs. Like, do you hang up the phone? Do you take a meeting with the rest of your group?
Right. Well, especially if you're feeling as though your job security is on the line.
Right.
This is where a lot of bad teams get tripped up, right? Because their general managers start to feel under pressure, so they have to feel like they need to do win-now moves instead of building toward a long-term future. Right. So, yeah, it wouldn't shock me if Vlade at least heard the Bulls out, but it would be a mistake.
Oh, for sure it would be. For sure.
Yeah.
And like, the Bulls are just an example because they have, like, contracts that could align pretty
right,
well.
Right, right, yeah. And young enough guys, I mean...
Right.
Like, yeah, Zach LaVine is by no means... Zach LaVine is definitely a future King. He just has future King written all over him.
I mean, he did sign the offer sheet with the Kings.
Yeah. Yeah,
which the Bulls maxed.
Interest, yeah. And that suggests the interest is there, or was there at one point, from the Kings.
Well, at least the money were there.
Yeah.
It might not even be LaVine, honestly. It could be someone else. Like, there are plenty of options right there. I'm just saying, I wouldn't be shocked if, to whoever team,
Yeah.
That De'Aaron Fox might actually get moved. Maybe also because if ownership, you know, is nervous about his extension and his longevity, like, they can talk themselves into a lot of dumb decisions.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And to prove my point, 1, 2, 3, Nick rocks.
I hope they never live that down.
I'll make sure that that is never forgotten.
Yeah. All right, well, let's go into the next best guy on the list. And I think it is Joe Harris, unless you have any other ideas.
So, I kind of do, but that would be a gamble on my end. So, I don't know if we are going to swing with that, or we're just going to go with safe old Joe.
I have a feeling I know who you're going to say.
Well, you're completely right, because I know that you know who I'm talking about.
Derek Jones Jr.
Exactly. Oh my God, we're co-hosts for way too long. Yeah.
Young, unproven, super athletic guy? Yep. Okay, great.
I mean, oh, that's a simplification, and I love it because you're not wrong.
Yeah. Let's start with Joe, and then we'll circle back, because we definitely need to hit Derek Jones.
All right, cool. We'll take safe old Joe. I agree. Like, right now, he's clearly better.
Yeah. And I think, again, in terms of interest and money, he's probably going to get more than Derek Jones, whether it's fair or not. I mean, Joe Harris is just the skill set he provides. One of the league's better three-point shooters over the last few years, led the league last season, or 2 years ago, shot 47.4 from deep. This year he's at 41.2. That says it all. You need guys with that skill set. Every team needs a guy like Joe Harris. So he's going to have plenty of interest on the market. He is 28, turning 29 in September. So you're catching him closer to the tail end of his prime than you are at the beginning. So a team like Atlanta Mort may not be as interested in giving him a super long-term four-year deal. But who do you think should be interested in Joe Harris this summer?
Well, let's bring one thing up first, because that you make the point about the age, which I think is interesting, because when you look at a guy like Joe, he doesn't really rely on athleticism. Mm-hmm. He's a shooter. His skill set is basically tailored to age gracefully.
That's true.
I wonder if NBA executives, this is entirely me speculating, right? But I wonder if executives are looking at guys like Joe Harris, who are primarily shooters, and then there's a big drop-off before their next, strength.
Mm-hmm.
If they look at age as something of a fluid thing, like, it doesn't really matter plus minus 3 or 4 or 5 years, because it's a shooter. Yeah. Like, it's just going to remain the same.
Seems I don't know. Possible.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to seeing him in Atlanta. I mean, Jesus Christ, could you imagine the spacing he'd provide for Trae Young? Good God.
Yeah, him, Herter, and Trae Young all in the same lineup at some point.
Ooh, yeah, that's gonna be a lot of shooting. And then you have DeAndre Hunter as well.
Yeah.
And John Collins improving even more. Maybe even Cam Reddish gets in on the fun.
Mm-hmm.
That could be fun. That could be really fun. But in terms of, his salary, that's a really good question, because here's the thing for me, right? He does shoot, he does shoot a lot, but I don't necessarily know if he shoots enough from the outside. Like, I just brought up Bogdan previously. He took over 7 triples a night in 28 minutes. And, Harris is under 6 in 31 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel that his skill set is maybe not being maximized in Brooklyn, and maybe in part because of Kyrie, Kyrie wasn't there last year, the year he shot 47, so that's not a fair point.
And Kyrie didn't only play 20 games this year.
Yeah, it does. That's me just chasing Kyrie. That's not fair. Sorry, Kyrie.
Right.
Although you did bring some of it on yourself, but that's fair. I think ultimately Harris, the volume needs to be there. He's just too good of a shooter to basically not lean into it a little bit more.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I would be hesitant a little bit in, goffing up some sort of $14-15 million offer a year. I don't know where you land on the value, but I would be a little bit nervous and, or at least cautious about that kind of number.
Yeah, it's really tricky. I mean, I'll start with this. You know, the rumor came out, we're recording this on Friday, so the rumor came out yesterday from Stephen Bonney of the New York Daily News, I think. Yeah. That the...
I wouldn't know, because I cannot open those links here in Europe.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, the rumor came out that the Nets are having internal discussions about trading for Bradley Beal. So, I mean, that's not news. Every team should be having discussions. One. Yeah,
yeah. I saw that getting aggregated. Okay.
Yeah. Every team should be having discussions about trading for Bradley Beal. But we did, you know, earlier this off season, I guess this temporary off season, Windhorst reported that the Nets are considering, you know, consolidating some of their talent for a third star as well. So it does seem like they're in the market to find someone. If they went for a guy like Beal in particular, that makes me think Joe Harris is expendable. So
I
would not be surprised if Joe Harris does not stay in Brooklyn this year. Now, what would a fair salary be for him? I think he should get above the MLE wherever it lands.
Yes.
Because I mean, if he sells for the MLE, he's going to... Every single team should be going after him with that.
Oh, yeah, and that's just why he won't, because then there's one team that's going to say, oh, that's all you can offer? I'm going to offer $12 million. But there you go. Boom.
Yeah, exactly. And I wouldn't hate it if it was Atlanta. Miami could be kind of interesting, too, but I don't think they offer the years that he would want.
Joe Harris on the one side, Duncan Robinson on the other, Jimmy Butler in the middle, you know, basically breaking down defenses and throwing it out to the corners for those two.
Yeah.
Oh, that, I mean, I have a semi already.
Right. The problem with Miami is that I think they're going to limit anything they offer to 1 year deals unless Giannis signs the Supermax. In which case, I think Miami is suddenly much more in play for some of these second tier players, because I think that would be smart for Miami to get ahead of the 2021 market where a lot more teams have cap space. Like, they're. You know, there aren't a ton of great players on this free agent market, but there are a lot of good role players.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the draft, this is going to be like a role player free agency.
Yeah. But that's not, I mean, it's like, okay, you're not going to get a guy who's going to single-handedly transform you from, you know, bottom of tier team to playoff team, but that doesn't mean these guys can't have an impact.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, what would be, like, where would I be comfortable with Joe Harris? Probably somewhere like 3 years, 35 to 40 million.
Yeah, so for actually in the 12 million a year range.
Yeah, somewhere right around there, I think.
That seems fair. Like 12 and a half.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be bad. That feels like good value on both sides, right?
Yeah, I mean, because what did Caris LeVert got? What did he end up? He got
ridiculous.
He was like 3 years, 50 something, right?
Right. It was really good.
Yeah. Why can I not see it? Yeah, 3 years, 52.5.
Yeah.
But he's younger and has more upside. So yeah, if you get Joe Harris at like 340, I still feel good about.
Mm. Yeah, that's not bad at all. Can we just rewind to one thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Kyrie Irving wanted out of Cleveland because he wanted to be the best guy, didn't want to play in LeBron's shadow, so he's going to go to Brooklyn where he can be the third best guy on the roster if they get Beal.
Yep. That would be what's going to happen, yes.
So this is like completely, you know, denial territory where he's going to sit there and go, oh, cool, we get Bradley Beal, but I'm still the star because I'm still the best, right? That's going to be the situation?
Definitely going to happen, yeah.
And that's definitely going to blow the hell up in his face, right?
I would assume so at some point, yes.
Yep.
Yeah. It's not going to end well.
Well, I mean, it's just good that good old three-eyed Raven Kyrie Irving, you know, can see these things coming, I guess.
He has to consult with Paul Pierce, who the Game of Zones has officially decreed as the GOAT.
Oh, boy. That That pissed off a lot of people. Wow.
It was so funny.
It was. It was truly great.
Yeah. If you had watched the whole season, you would know they have been teasing at it for a while now. They set him up as Bran at least as early as the first episode of this season, which means spoiler alert for Game of Thrones, if you still haven't seen the ending, but also don't watch the ending because you're going to get pissed off. But yeah, it was they set up that ending for a while now.
Yeah, they did. Oh, it's glorious.
Yeah. All right, let's go into Derek Jones Jr. more, because after Joe Harris, there's just like a bunch of guys who, all of whom I think are productive role players, but I don't know if any of these guys get more than the MLE. So let's start with Jones Jr.
Superbly athletic. I think we all know that. Mm-hmm. What I like about him is how he can be defensively when he applies that athleticism. So he is long, and he can play the passing lanes. He can challenge shots around the rim. He can rebound sometimes even out of his area. This is still a developing skill set. He's only just turned 23. He turned 23, in February, so he's still very, very young, and he's still kind of learning whether to be a perimeter player or an inside player. And I think ultimately it's going to be a little bit of both. I think he's going to be one of those combo forwards, in the Harrison Barnes mold. Like, you play a little bit of three, you play, more so at the four, but you can slot down to the three if necessary. For him, it's about the jump shot. Yeah. But I'm very optimistic about his growth, because he took a huge step up free throw wise this year. Like, he went from 60% to almost 78. Like, that's a major leap. He got better as a playmaker. He just kind of looked more mature. Got smarter with his shot selection. The three ball, still a work in progress, but I would feel confident in basically gamble a little bit on his future. I would be willing to say, you know what, the progression that I saw from last year to this year is enough for me to at least bet on him for, on a 3-year contract. I wouldn't have a problem with that, and I would even be willing to overpay a little bit, because if he hits, then he's probably going to outplay the value of his contracts for at least 2 years, if not all three of them.
Right. So are you thinking full non-taxpayer MLE or even higher?
I would probably be willing to go higher, fully knowing that I could also risk, locking him up on a deal that might look dumb. But if it's a 3-year deal, who cares?
Yeah.
It's okay. Right. I realize that, years are more important than money and all that, and 3 years is very close to the max level contract, but still, three seasons, it feels like nothing.
Yeah. Well, and he's young enough too. He just turned 23 in February, so he's in the age range where even some of these rebuilding teams, it might make sense to go after. Like, a Phoenix could have legitimate interest in him.
Yeah, and he's already been there. So he would already know the system. Mm-hmm. I think what could be interesting, are some of those teams who are kind of rebuilding. Like, Detroit is a team that I think could be very, very interesting for him.
Mm.
Depending on what they do, of course, with Christian Wood.
Yeah.
I mean, because if they retain Christian Wood, and they're going to give a significant minutes boost to Dumboya, then it probably gets a little bit tight, right? The Bulls, another situation right there where it makes sense because he fits age-wise. There are definitely some situations out there where you could argue this would make, some sense. Atlanta, that's the interesting team for me, because they are really gunning for being this team that can shoot the three at every position, apparently, except for the center spot where they acquired Clint Capella.
Right.
So I don't really know how he would fit into that scheme, but I will say this. If they end up trading John Collins for a major haul, and they're looking for a full-time power forward replacement who will cost a fraction of the new contract that John Collins is going to get.
Yeah.
Hello, Derek Jones Jr.
Yeah. Because you don't necessarily have to. You don't have to have him overlap with Clint Capella for all of his minutes. I mean, if that's the concern, the lack of shooting, okay, fine, it's a valid concern. But then just, I don't want to say stagger them, but, you know, like play, have them play 20 minutes per game with each other and then 20 however minutes without, or 15, whatever, without.
Right, and they have DeAndre Hunter who can slide up to the four. Right. So, I mean, you can mix and match that way, and they have Dwayne Dedmon,
mm-hmm.
who can shoot the three, theoretically. I mean, he did for Atlanta before. He just went cold in Sacramento. So if you then pair them that way, and you actually do stagger those two, so you have DeAndre Hunter with Capella, and you have Jones with Dedmon, you know, theoretically it could work.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see it.
And just think about the lobs, Brian.
Yeah.
Trae Young, fun. Derek Jones Jr. lobs.
Right, right. If nothing else, it would be super fun. So I'm on board with this plan.
It would be super fun, and you could also make the argument that if he is one of those guys who'll just benefit the living hell out of, you know, being a lob threat,
mm-hmm.
then maybe you don't need the outside shooting. Like, if he converts, you know, 65% of his field goals just by catching lobs, and he's a, you know, downright elite efficiency shot maker at the four spot, well, okay then. You'll live with that.
I guess the question is whether you think Hunter or Reddish will be a full-time four as well.
Not Reddish. Not Reddish. Yeah. Reddish is more of a 2-3. I think he's too slight of frame.
Yeah.
But DeAndre Hunter, ultimately, I think could become that guy.
Right.
And this is why, you know, this could be a stepping stone thing. NBA teams don't make moves, you know, necessarily for the now. They also make moves that they know they might sign a guy because they're going to flip him later on. So what they could do is sign Derek Jones Jr. to this, like, maybe a, you know, let's just go with your idea of the non-tax MLE. That's like $9.4 million, right?
Yeah, well, we don't, wherever it comes in with the
right, but yeah, just
somewhere in the $9 to $10 million.
Right, but at the start of this, you know, when the position breakdown, we actually said that we're going to be assuming that the NBA duplicates the salary cap from this year.
Yeah, so yeah, I think it was 9.4, 9.5, somewhere around there.
Okay. So if Derek Jones Jr. signs for that MLE at $9.4 million, you know, and they just boost his trade value significantly,
yeah,
then he becomes a very attractive trade piece that they can move for an even bigger haul down the line.
Right, because if nothing else, one thing I learned during the BRGM week is that you want guys on your team. It's hard to make trades if you just have max guys and guys on rookie deals. Like, you want right. guys in that $10 to $15 million range just for salary matching purposes. I mean, also, it'd be great if they are productive players and you can have them and you don't necessarily need to trade them. But it becomes a lot easier to make deals if you have a couple guys in that ballpark. So,
correct.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't hate that from Atlanta's perspective. Just, I mean, because, you know, if you do the MLE, it would probably be about like 3 years, $30 million.
Mm-hmm.
That's an okay gamble to make, I think.
It is. And here's the added benefit, because I was sitting here spending a lot of energy saying, oh, if he doesn't improve as a shooter, well, yeah, I mean, he can.
Right.
What if that happens all of a sudden?
Yeah.
If he suddenly becomes a 35, 37% shooter from range, while he's still a lobbing threat and, mm-hmm. and he's improving his defense, then hell, then maybe he actually just changes the plans of Atlanta. Maybe Atlanta signs him with the idea of, hey, maybe we can package him and someone else for something really, really good down the line. And then maybe he just develops into being that really, really good player that they kind of want and go, hey, we don't have to trade for anybody because we have right. that guy right here.
Right, right. Yeah. The one question I would have is, do you think he and Hunt, like, will he cut into Hunter's minutes? What do you think of Hunter moving forward? But,
well, see, I actually haven't answered that, because Hunter, I think, is one of those rare players, much like Kawhi. Not comparing him to, I understand there were Kawhi comparisons when he came out. That's not what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
But while you know, today when we look like a guy at Harrison Barnes who's more of a four than the three.
Oh, I see, yeah.
DeAndre Hunter can play the full-time three, and he can play the full-time four. He's not one of those guys where you kind of call him a combo, but he's more of a power forward than he really is a three. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. He can legitimately play both forward positions without issue. Like, he isn't too big to play the three. He isn't, you know, too small to play the four, whatever. Like, that he has that ability to play both positions, which I think is a tremendous asset for Atlanta moving forward. But it mm-hmm. also means that they have to absolutely nail who has to be, like, the future small forward or power forward on that team, because that player has to play in conjunction with Hunter.
Right. And whether it's... I mean, if they think Reddish is the three, then there's the answer right there. But if not, do you think Hunter and Derek Jones Jr. could be compatible long-term, especially next to Clint Capella? That's the big question moving
forward. That is the big question. If Hunter becomes a three-point shooter that we all think he can be, then I think that helps the situation along tremendously. Mm-hmm. Also, if Jones starts to hit the three at a more consistent rate, for sure. Right. But I will say there's another team that I'm really dying to bring up as a Derek Jones Jr. Destination.
The Knicks, Dallas, because they don't have enough power forwards.
That is true. Dallas.
Oh, Dallas would be fun. Ooh, next to Kristaps.
Next to Kristaps and Luka, just basically setting him up. Mm-hmm. And also, I think having Rick Carlisle working at him in practice.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be one of the most underrated things you can do for Derek Jones Jr.'s development. I know that he's a tough ass. I know. But Derek Jones Jr. just came from the Miami Heat organization.
Right.
He is accustomed to hard work. Rick Carlisle, if anything, he is going to make sure that Jones Jr. is going to be playing at the very best of his abilities. And then you have the Luka factor. Like, he's going to get open Tim Hardaway Jr. shots all night long.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that fit.
Yeah.
But I think, unless Hardaway opts out, I believe they're over the cap already, so they would be limited to the MLE.
Right, and that's the issue. But hey, who knows? Worth a shot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And also, let's not forget something, because we seem to always like leave this point out when we speak about free agents, right? Players can also choose to go where they want.
Yes.
Like, if Derek Jones Jr.'s agent sees more upside in his development in going to Dallas instead of somewhere else.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
Maybe they're willing to take a discount to go there. Like, that is something that we routinely forget to mention, but it's certainly something that is brought up a lot.
Yes, that is a fair point.
Yeah.
So, I don't know who the fifth best free agent on this market is. If we're saying Harris was three, Derek Jones is four. It's like Mo Harkless, Jay Crowder, Torrey Craig are the guys that jumped out to me, but I couldn't honestly tell you who I feel more strongly about than another.
Oh, that is difficult. Well, see, I actually have the answer for you.
Okay. Is it none of the above?
Yes, because you and I made that mistake again of not looking at positional breakdowns.
Oh boy.
We actually have a different small forward who we didn't bring up.
Oh, who?
Marcus Morris.
Oh, okay, yeah, I threw him in with power forwards, I believe.
Yeah, he played 68% of his minutes at the three with the Knicks, and he didn't play a whole... He played almost exclusively the four with the Clippers, but he only played 12 games, so...
Right. Perfect, let's count it.
I think we should count him. He's a three, especially based on this season. So he obviously... We were going to shoo him in above Derek Jones Jr. at the least.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. He's fourth. Derek Jones Jr. is fifth. We don't have to waste time talking about Mo Harkless. All of those guys are good, fine role players. Don't pay him more than the MLE. Done.
Right. So let's get into Marcus.
Yeah. Now this is going to be an interesting one, because he put up, great numbers with the Knicks.
Right.
He was their leading scorer, I believe, almost 20 points a game.
Yep.
Shot a career high from three, almost 44% from three on six attempts per game. He's 30 years old already. He's turning 31 in September. He comes with the hothead reputation that may scare off some teams. Do you think the Clippers, let's start with that. Do you think the Clippers should want him back?
Yes, I do, simply because I think they tried to make an investment here, and for 12 games, it didn't really pan out. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they've seen, you know, what Marcus Morris is. I said on this podcast, when Morris was still a Nick, that I thought those numbers didn't really mean a whole lot. And I took a lot of pushback on that on Twitter. A lot of people basically said, oh, so it's because it's the Knicks, you're not counting Marcus Morris's stats as being legitimate. You're damn right I don't.
Right.
You're damn right I don't.
Yes.
So I think ultimately, you know, him going down to being like a 10-point scorer and shooting 38% from the field, 28% from three, that is not his true value. Right. But I also don't think his true value is shooting 44% from downtown on high volume in New York is necessarily the right thing. So I think his true value is somewhere in the middle. And mm-hmm. that is at least good enough to give the Clippers a very, very big boost off the bench.
Yeah. And here's the good thing for the Clippers is that he signed the 1-year $15 million contract with the Knicks. So they right. they only have non-bird rights on him, which means they can offer 120% of what he earned this past year. So they, if they sign him that way instead of using cap space, which they will not have, they can sign him up to $18 million with his salary just next year. He's correct. Not getting that on the free agent market. So they don't have to worry about like dipping into an exception or cap space to re-sign him. They can use the non-bird to re-sign him. I guess the question is how much should they be willing to shell out?
Oh, so that depends on whether they want to go long-term or short-term, though.
I would assume short-term just to protect against the possibility of Kawhi and Paul George leaving and them being stuck with Marcus Morris as one of their chief guys moving forward.
That's a good point. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Are we looking in the same ballpark as Joe Harris, so around 12 million, 12 and a half?
Oof. Oh, man. I guess, see, it comes down to where the luxury tax line falls, not that Steve Ballmer is going to really care. Like
Steve Ballmer laughs at your luxury tax.
Yeah, but like if you could stay under, more for the repeater tax implications than paying the tax next year, he doesn't care. You're right. But
Steve Ballmer laughs at the repeater tax.
I'm just looking, based on what I'm seeing on early bird rights, if the cap is at $115 million, it looks like they have about $25 million in breathing room before they hit the tax, but they also have to re-sign Montrezl Harrell. So I think it comes down to how much Montrezl re-signs for, or if he re-signs, and then if they can get Morris in the fold as well and stay under the tax, I think that would be their dream scenario. But if the cap falls, that's probably out the window anyway.
I just don't think they care about money.
They shouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah, but I honestly don't think. Look, Steve Ballmer, I think he is so emotionally invested in this team. I don't think he cares. And he is so filthy rich.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be shocked if like he was completely fine and didn't bat an eye or lose a minute's worth of sleep if he had the biggest luxury tax bill in the league history.
The Warriors have him covered there next year.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, even down the line,
I
think he is willing to see this through. For him to stand up at that podium and receive an NBA championship,
yeah,
I think that trounces everything.
Yeah, I would agree. I think a reasonable contract for Marcus Morris, if you're the Clippers, you're protecting against Paul George and Kawhi leaving.
Right,
you could do like, I think you would love it if you can get 2 years 16 with make it a 1+1.
Wait, like two, so you know,
eight
per year.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So not, so that was total. Oh, yeah. I mean, that would be a bargain, no?
Before last year, he never earned more than like $5 or $6 million a season. His previous high was 5.4.
I know, but even so, like if we take the season he had in Boston the last year, like his age 29 season, right?
Yeah.
He was good. Like he was legitimately one of their best players. And that is like, I think that's where he's going to end up again.
Yeah, maybe you'll have to go to the full mid-level, whatever it ends up being. So you could even do 2 years, 20.
I'm willing to splash 1.4 extra million. Okay.
I don't know if I would go much higher than that. Because who's going to offer him that much money again? Who's going above the mid-level for him?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Oh, okay. You mean this market is specifically. Yeah.
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 So if I'm the Clippers, like, I think I would try to do a little less, 216, just to say, like, hey, this is the championship tax. This is the price you pay to actually be on a good team and not the New York Knicks.
Right.
You can go sign with a crap team, sure. But, yeah, I mean, if he's like, all right, well, I'm going to leave and sign a full non-taxpayer somewhere else, then you probably have to go up to that. But
right. No, yeah, I think playing hardball is fine.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying you should start at 12.5, but I'm saying, right, you know, you should probably be willing to end up there.
I guess so. I mean, again, who's offering him that much money?
No, I know. That's, well, I don't know.
I don't think it exists. Or if it is, it's like Detroit. And say good riddance.
And he's already been with Detroit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Miami's not doing it.
No, you're right.
I just don't think he gets an offer above the mid-level. So I think you start up a little bit lower. And if he says, okay, great, screw you, I'm going to go sign the mid-level somewhere else, then you reconsider and say, okay, fine, we'll match that.
Right. I guess for him, he would probably be willing to sign a one-year, or not be willing, he would probably prefer to sign a one-year deal until the cap gets back up and the free agency market is a little bit more lucid.
Yeah, right. It benefits him as well. And then it also, again, protects the Clippers in case. I don't see why Paul George or Kawhi are going to opt out or leave after next season anyway.
Right.
Like that. I mean, George, Leonard, and LeBron all have player options in 2021. I don't think any of them are actually going to opt out. But, protect against the off chance that they do.
Yeah. I guess that's just like the necessary requirement today if you're a superstar. You need that flexibility.
Right, right. Yeah. I don't know. He's going to be a really interesting case, but I agree that the Clippers should want him back, despite...
Right.
Even though, you know, he didn't put up the numbers that he did with the Knicks, he was never going to put up those numbers because he's not the number one option on the Clippers anywhere. He's behind Kawhi, Paul George, Lou Williams, Montrezl Harrell. Fine. You don't need him to put up massive numbers. But, yeah, I mean, the versatility he adds, like being able to throw out Kawhi, George, and him all in the same lineup. Like, the game they played against Denver was just, like, such an absolute beatdown.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a big part of it. It was just like you could not deal with having that much length on the floor and having that many versatile forwards. It was...
Right.
I mean, like, his numbers weren't great that game, but they still obliterated a Denver Nuggets team that was one game from the Western Conference Finals last year by 29 points.
Oh, that is ridiculous. I remember that game somewhat. I do. When you're bringing it up right now, it's like, oh, right, they did.
Yeah, we watched it. We were in Baltimore about to go look at houses the next day. And I'm like watching that game. I'm like, holy God. Like, this Clippers team, you know, there were concerns about them for a lot of the year because they just weren't that consistent because George missed time, Leonard missed time, whatever. And that game was just like, no, F you, we're really good. We promise we are very good and we are going to destroy excellent teams.
I want partial credit for never doubting them. I've been steady as a rock on them all year long.
Me too. Yeah, I didn't understand it at all.
Now, I will say this. I did switch to the Bucks in terms of my championship favorites, sure, but that was not a slight against the Clippers. That was just, oh, hell, Giannis wasn't lying. He was only 60% done.
Right.
That cake is still not baked through. Like, no,
somehow.
He's still soft in the middle. We got to firm that thing up a little bit.
Well, that's a good place to wrap up. So thank you all, as always, for listening. I promise the Power Forwards episode is going to be incredible. We might have to break it up into two episodes because there are going to be so many guys we need to hit.
Oh, boy. That would be great. Hashtag more content. But also, we should clarify. while we understand that Brandon Ingram, from a positional perspective, played the four this year, obviously moving forward, playing alongside Zion Williamson, he is going to play the three. Correct. We just had this rule in place when we started this series, so we need to adhere to our own rule sets, because if we don't, it's just all chaos.
That is correct. I just dumbly assumed, I did not, he was the one guy I didn't even check his position, but now I know. But
that actually reminds me, Brian, should we just see if Anthony Davis technically is a center?
I did check him. He is not.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
good.
We're good. So, yes.
Before we leave today, yeah. I just want to send out a shout-out to the family of Jerry Sloan.
Yes.
Jerry passed away today at the age of 78. Mm-hmm. I was always very, very impressed with Sloan growing up. Not just because he was this hard-ass, tough-ass coach for Utah and one of those most loyal coaches in league history. You know, as everyone is well aware, I grew up a Bulls fan, so I was treated to, you know, highlights and small, you know, 2-minute documentaries on, you know, Bulls.com or whatever from the 70s with Sloan. And, you know, his tenacity defensively, you know, we usually, you know, make a lot of fun about players who played in the 40s, 50s, and 60s and all of this, you mm-hmm. know, because they simply wouldn't stand up the test of time. And offensively, I think that's true also for Jerry Sloan. But this guy was so smart. And defensively, I've been fortunate enough to actually watch a couple games with him from back in the 70s. You know, at some point, a guy uploaded old games on YouTube. Unfortunately, that account is gone now. But the defensive tenacity and just his aggressiveness defensively and his smarts, like, that was something else. This guy mm-hmm. could have played defense this year. Like, it didn't help that he smoked 3 packs of cigarettes a day. That did not help.
No,
so imagine if he didn't do that under these circumstances. Like, oh my God. But yeah, I mean, the NBA just, they lost a great one. It's been a rough year. Stern, yeah. Kobe, and now Jerry Sloan. Yeah. I saw someone tweet out, I will murder 2020 if it takes Bill Russell. I can only echo that sentiment. So let's keep our NBA legends intact for at least 2021, please.
Yes, please. No more. Yeah, yeah. But good note to end on. And yeah, we hope you all are staying safe out there. I know a lot of places are opening back up. So I just encourage everyone to stay safe, be smart, wear masks if you're out in public. I promise you're... tacos can be taken out as well as eaten in a restaurant.
Yes, and don't clip a hole in your mask because so you can better breathe.
Right. Yes. Or shovel food in your face, yeah.
That would be a very, very good idea to not do that, yeah.
Yeah. Please follow us on Twitter, at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We are being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter, at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I'm going to be spending the rest of my evening just reading up on Zack Snyder's Justice League, which will...
Oh, boy.
The Snyder Cut is a reality, baby, and I couldn't be more thrilled.
I'll leak you all the information that they don't give me.
Later.
Later.